This interview is being conducted on Thursday, January 21st, 2016, with Mr. Larry Grabowski at the Indian Prairie Public Library in Darien, Illinois. My name is Deb Barrett. Mr. Grabowski was born on June 28, 1945, in Chicago, Illinois. He is a retired accountant for People's Gas in Chicago, and he learned of the Veterans History Project through the family of Joe Popowich, the librarian here who was responsible for this project. Mr. Grabowski has kindly consented to be interviewed for this project. Here is his story. So, Larry, where were you living when you entered the service? What was your life like just before you went in?
I grew up near Douglas Park, which was kind of a bad neighborhood. It was a poor area. And in fact, one of the friends that I grew up with was he was a big time football coach, and they had an article about him in the Chicago Sun Times. And in that article, he mentioned that he grew up in the slums. So I guess I can say I grew up in the slums, and it was a bad neighborhood.
Okay, so when you went into the service, did you? Were you living at home? Were you in high school? Were you
school? Well, I had graduated from college, and I was living at home, anticipating getting drafted. And you know, it was in those days, it was almost certain that you would get drafted and go to Vietnam, and that's exactly the way it happened.
Okay, so were you working while you were waiting, or
I was. I had. When I worked for People's Gas, I had a really nice deal where I was, when I was my last year of high school, I worked as a messenger. I would pick up mail from outlying locations. And then all during college, I was a messenger. And like during the summers, I worked full time. And during school, I worked after school. So it was a terrific job for me. And so I did have that job when I got drafted.
Okay, and you said you knew you were going to get drafted. Pretty sure.
Yeah.
Had you had any family members who had been in the service or?
No.
No. So you were the first one.
Yes.
And what was your family's reaction to your draft notice coming in?
Well, my father was kind of a strange person. No reaction from him. And my mother was, you know, she was concerned, of course. And so, you know, she just had to get used to it, just like I did.
Mm-hmm. So how much time did you have after you received your notice before you had a report?
I'm going to say a month, and I'm just guessing.
Okay.
Something like that.
Okay, and do you remember what you did during that time?
Put on a lot of weight. Went out drinking with my friends and, you know, kind of like going away parties from various groups of people. It's just the way it was.
So where were you inducted?
I remember going downtown somewhere. I think that's where it was. It was some like Van Buren and something, and that was like a meat processing plant, so to speak. You know, people just came through there and then shipped you out to wherever they were going to ship you.
So what did you see when you got downtown and you got to that location? When you walked in, what was there?
Oh, there were just, you know, guys like me all over the place, just not looking forward to the experience,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, they gave you a physical and, you know, filling out paperwork and all that kind of stuff. It took most of a day, but mm-hmm. by the end of that day, they had figured out where they were going to send you.
So did they give you your uniforms and things there?
No, that didn't happen until you got to your basic training place.
Okay.
Which in my case was Fort Polk, Louisiana. And And having been to Vietnam, Fort Polk, Louisiana, were the conditions there were about as close to Vietnam as it could be. I mean, just hot and humid and just awful.
Okay. So after you were sworn in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
and then how did you get down to Louisiana?
I think I had a fly. Well, yeah, I had a fly.
Okay.
And so...
Just a commercial flight?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And one of my friends from that I had... How did I get to know him? I'm trying to remember how I... But his family drove me to the airport because my family didn't have a car. So, you know, that's kind of the way it happened.
Okay. So you flew down. When you got down to Louisiana, how did you get to the base?
Then they had a bus.
Okay.
That bused us to the actual military base. And I still remember this. You know, we got in late at night, and... They took us to the military base, and of course we hadn't eaten very much, so they put us in the mess hall, and I still remember this. You know, they had some food for us, and you know, and already they were preparing us for the meanness of the people who run the army. And so I remember, you know, they kept talking about, you better eat everything that's on your plate. And I had put something on my plate that I thought was Jell-O, and it turned out to be jelly. And here I'm hearing these words: "You better eat everything on your plate." So that was, you know, that was my first encounter with you know, the military people.
So it was that you were drafted into the Army.
Yes.
And you were 21?
Yeah, 21, somewhere around there. So let's see, 68. No, it was probably 23. About 23.
Okay. So it was 1968, you said?
Yeah.
Okay. So you had something to eat, and then got your quarters?
Yeah, and then they, you know, then we got our bunk beds and all that stuff, and just got ready for basic training.
And what was your, you said you had bunk beds. What were your barracks like?
Pretty sparse, you know, just beds and a little foot locker where you kept, you know, whatever personal things you might have had. So, yeah, it was no big deal. Just, you know, they had to give us some place to sleep, and it was not much more than that.
Mm-hmm. Did you have the top bunk or the bottom bunk?
You know, to be honest, remember? But I remember having to make your bed all the time, and they were very strict. If you made your bed and it wasn't satisfactory, they'd just tip everything over, and you'd have to do it again. And so it was, you know, that was their way of disciplining us.
Mm-hmm. And the things you had in your foot locker, did you have a standing locker as well?
Or it was just a
foot locker?
Yeah, a foot locker. It wasn't tall. It was... And really, there wasn't much to put in there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, maybe the clothes that I came in, my civilian clothes, I might have had in there.
Was there anything you were not allowed to bring?
That really wasn't an issue, because, you know, there wasn't much that was going to do you much good in the service.
Right.
And so... Again, I'm probably thinking ahead to like when I went to Vietnam, you know, like I brought a transistor radio and, you know, things like that. But for basic training, I don't think there was hardly anything I had down there.
Okay.
Civilian type stuff.
So how did they wake you up that first morning?
Well, they came in at the crack of dawn and blowing whistles and, you know, get your feet on the ground and... you know, again, kind of a rough attitude, and you know, so you woke up and you had to make your bed, and then you were could go to the mess hall and grab breakfast, bite to eat.
How much time did you have to get ready and
It wasn't a huge amount of time, but you know, they always wanted to keep you moving,
right,
and rushing, you know, that kind of thing. And you just had to deal with it.
Did you go to the mess hall as a unit or just separately?
Yeah, we went as a unit, as I recall. And
did you have to march there, or was it just?
You know, I think so.
Okay.
I think we had to, yeah. And once you got there, you ate and get ready for the day.
How was the breakfast? Was it a good breakfast?
It was okay. You know, some meals were okay, some were not okay.
Just whatever you take, you eat.
Yes, right, yeah. I mean, they would have eggs and bacon, and they would have what we call shit on a shingle, mm-hmm. which was creamed beef on toast. So they did have a variety, mm-hmm. as best as they could do.
Give you lots of calories.
Yeah, right, uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay. And after breakfast, normal?
Then training, you know, depending on, you know, you would start the day off with a long run. You know, you have to run all over quite a ways you had to run.
Mm-hmm.
And then do calisthenics and all that kind of stuff. And then after that, you would go training, you know, depending, there would be classes or going to the rifle range, or, you know, skills that you would need to mm-hmm. be into the service.
What sort of classes were there? Were like classroom classes?
Yeah, yeah.
Like what, for example?
It might be. You know, it's hard to remember. It was all geared towards being in the military, and
uh-huh.
you know, like the Geneva Convention and. Things like that, and that's about the only thing that comes to mind. But it was always related to being in the Army, being in the military, and learning.
Did you know at that point that you were going to Vietnam? Was that just assumed?
Yeah, it was assumed. Fort Polk was a Vietnam shipping point.
Okay.
And I in my mind, I was pretty sure I was going to go there. And,
okay.
And then towards the end of basic training, that's when you got your orders, and you had to go to advanced training then.
Uh-huh.
And my advanced training was also at Fort Polk.
So you just stayed there?
I stayed there. And at that point in time, you know, they didn't tell you quite yet you're going to Vietnam, but it was known that if you're going to AIT, Advanced Infantry Training, you're going to Vietnam.
Okay.
And that's the way it turned out.
So how long was your basic training?
8 weeks, as was the advanced infantry
okay.
training.
Okay, so basically 4 months worth of training.
Yeah.
Were you able to communicate with your family back home during that time?
Not like if you're in the service now with email and, you know,
mm-hmm.
You know, different devices. It was all snail mail.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, the mail would take a long time to get, you know, in either direction.
But there were no restrictions on communication?
Not really, as far as mail goes. Calling was another matter. You know, if you got to call home, it would be a real treat.
Mm-hmm.
So.
So you went in. What time of the year did you go in?
May. So I was in training like May for 4 months. By the time I got my orders for Vietnam, it was October. So
okay.
I had the pleasure of being at Fort Polk, Louisiana for the heat of summer.
The summer months. Oh, yeah. And it gets hot down
there.
Oh,
it's awful, yeah.
Okay. Well, that was preparation.
Oh, yeah, that was, yeah.
So when you finished your eight weeks of advanced, well, first of all, when you did the advanced infantry training, had you held a gun before you went to basic?
Never.
Never. No. So this was a whole new experience for you.
Yes. In fact, today, friends that I have that were in the military, they were clerks or whatever, but kind of joking. Now, one of them is a gun fanatic. Not fanatic, but he collects guns.
Right.
And the fact that I have no interest in ever mm-hmm. getting a gun or any of that stuff. So, and he finds it ironic that. You know, I used a gun in the military, and I don't care to now.
Mm-hmm. So when you first were given your rifle, what did they tell you?
Well, first of all, the advanced infantry training, they used a rifle called an M14, which was obsolete. They didn't use it in Vietnam.
Okay.
So here they are training you to go to war on a weapon that you were not going to use.
Okay.
And so that was stupid to begin with. And then when you got to Vietnam, you got an M16.
Okay.
So, you know, again, there's all these odd situations happening, you know, about that.
How did they, when they trained you, you had target practice.
Yeah.
What other type of practice?
You know, like in the advanced infantry, you know, like marching through the woods at night, because mm-hmm. that's what you would be doing over in Vietnam. And I still, this is another event that I remember. They had kind of like a telescope that you could see. You could look through there and you could see at night
mm-hmm.
you know, things happening. And I remember they kept telling me, you better not drop that because this costs, I don't know how many thousands of dollars. And if it breaks, it's coming out of your paycheck. And I remember shaking, carrying this thing. But, you know, that's one thing that kind of sticks out in my mind. But it was, you know, again, trying to get you ready for being in Vietnam, you know.
Did you do live fire exercises?
Not live, but, again, target practice,
mm-hmm.
That kind of thing. Yeah, I don't remember, you know, that kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
firing against somebody else. Although maybe it did happen, I don't remember that.
Do they do anything with you? Well, I know some people have talked about crawling under barbed wire.
Oh, yeah.
While
yeah.
being shot over knee, shooting above.
Yeah, that was all part of it, yes.
Getting you accustomed to the sounds in the field.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, and then, you know, like when it would rain, you know, it's just dealing with the rain and being out in the field and having to live that way, you know.
Mm-hmm. Did you do any exercises that involved you staying overnight in tents or anything?
Oh,
or?
Yeah. There was activities like that. And
What were they like? How long were they, and what were you expected to do?
Oh, it might be like a day or two,
mm-hmm.
you know, out in the field, just to get used to not being, having a roof over your head.
Mm-hmm.
So that was that.
So you had your 8 weeks of advanced training.
Well, it was 4 and 4.
Oh, 4 and 4. Okay.
4 basic and 4 advanced.
Okay, so it was 2 months that you were in training then, really?
I think so.
Okay.
Does that make sense? Or maybe it was eight and eight. I don't, you know, to be honest with you.
Okay.
If I went in May and I didn't go to Vietnam until October.
That sounds like 4 months.
4 months. So maybe it was 8 weeks each.
8 weeks each. Okay.
Okay.
So when you got your orders, when you finished your advanced training and you got your orders that you were going to Vietnam, you said you were not surprised.
Correct, yeah.
Did you have any time between advanced training and the time you left for Vietnam?
Yeah, I think we got about 3 weeks or so.
So were you able to go home?
Yeah, right. And then again, you know, at that point it was going away parties from various friends
mm-hmm.
and so forth.
And from there, when your 3 weeks were over, you went to the airport. Where did you meet?
Yeah, we had to, I think they just told you to report to, it was Oakland, California. And you had to get there on your own. And, you know, once you got there is when the, you know, then the fun really started.
Okay. So where did you meet in Oakland?
They had some facility there where it was like a factory of processing guys going over to Vietnam.
And you said, you know, you had your uniform and stuff
well,
like
no,
that.
No, that's when, no.
They got it, you got it there?
T- to be honest with you, we didn't get our real uniforms until we got to Vietnam.
Oh, okay.
So we must have had some other kind of temporary uniform.
Something, yeah.
To get us there.
But you also mentioned some things, some personal things you took.
I did, yeah. And
What sort of things did you take?
Just, you know, like paper and envelopes and, you know.
So you could write letters.
And again, that transistor radio, you know, something to shave with. And, you know, again, pretty sparse stuff. And, of course, whatever you brought, you had to carry on your back.
Right.
So that, you know, you had to, well, when we get into the next step,
okay.
I'll bring up a situation where
okay.
I had too much.
Okay. So, but you had to take that into account when you were figuring out what you wanted to bring with
yeah,
you.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So you met in Oakland.
Yes.
Did you know any of the other men going overseas?
I knew a couple. In fact, that incident where I talked about getting driven to the airport, it was one of my friends from basic training. His
okay.
family drove to the airport. And I knew him, and there were a handful of other guys that I trained with. And while there, one of the things that you are assigned every now and then is KP, I'm sure you've
mm-hmm.
heard of that, which is a demeaning job.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so even in Oakland, you know, you'd think they'd let you have a couple of days to have fun, but I got stuck on KP. So, like, everybody was going to town, you know, to party,
mm-hmm.
and here I was cutting potatoes and, you know, that kind of stuff.
Just a rotation.
Yeah, right. That's just
the luck of the draw.
The luck of the draw, exactly, right.
Okay. Did you have any free time while you were in Oakland?
I didn't, no. So we were there maybe a couple of days. Again, they're filling out paperwork, and then they assigned us to where we were going to end up in Vietnam.
And, okay.
And then when we got there, I forgot, there were a couple of cities where everybody went pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, it would be all over again. You know, they would divide you up into whatever unit you were going to be, go to.
They did that in Vietnam or in Oakland?
In Vietnam.
Okay.
Yeah.
So in Oakland, you knew what city you were going to in Vietnam, but that was it?
Yeah, right. And again, knowing that didn't really tell you anything. You didn't know what where you were going to end up in the country.
And you knew what you were going to be doing? Were you infantry?
Oh, yeah, I was infantry.
You were infantry.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, some people were trained in one thing, and when they got over there, they ended up something else. But I trained in infantry, and I became infantry.
Okay.
And which is ironic too, and when you so-called graduated from advanced infantry training, you know, they were calling your name off and telling you where you were going to go, and there were guys who could barely read who were sent to finance school.
Okay.
And I had a degree in finance. Now, does that make any sense? But, again, that's the way it worked, and so be it.
Okay. So you had a degree in finance from?
University of Illinois.
At Chicago?
Chicago, yeah.
Okay. So, but you ended up in infantry?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you were in Oakland for a couple of days.
Yeah.
Where do they house you for?
Again, they had a, you know, unit. They had buildings there where, I mean, it was like a factory
uh-huh.
running people through there. Because back then, there were 500,000 guys we had in Vietnam, I
right.
think, at the peak. So it was a lot of people.
Was it a regular military installation, military base they had you on? Or
I believe so.
Okay.
I believe so, yeah.
So when it was time to go to Vietnam, you flew?
Yes.
Was it a plane of just
Just soldiers.
Just soldiers.
Yes.
A commercial flight or?
Yeah.
Okay. And where were you headed?
I forget if the city was, I think it was called Benoit, which was one of the big cities where you landed. I don't think I was ever in Saigon.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Benoit was the city where I landed, and it was another processing situation where they figured out where you were needed.
So, but on the trip over there, you're on this flight with all these other men going to the same place.
Yeah.
What was the mood like on the plane?
Pretty quiet. Everybody knew what life was going to be like when we landed.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it was a really long flight. I think we may have landed in Hawaii, even. I think we landed in Hawaii to refuel and all that. But, it was a pretty quiet crowd for the most part.
So you went from Oakland to Hawaii. Did you make another stop before Vietnam?
We may have.
But you stayed on the plane while they refueled?
Yeah, we didn't get to walk around very much or anything.
Okay. What did you do during that time? You said it was quiet.
Yeah, well, I'm a reader, I read a lot, and I'm sure I was reading.
Mm-hmm.
And, small talk with the other people on the plane.
Mm-hmm. So, was your commanding officer on the plane, or?
Oh, no, you didn't know who it was.
Not till you got there.
Not till you got to, first you landed in Vietnam, and then you went to the actual unit that you were going to.
Okay. So when you landed in Vietnam, was it daytime, nighttime?
I think it was daytime. And then, you saw all these Vietnamese people working at the airport.
Mm-hmm. Did you notice anything when you were coming in to land, or were you looking out to?
Yeah, looking at the terrain. It was a very green country.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of jungle and not any big cities where we were.
Mm-hmm.
So.
So you said you landed in Benoit.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Do you remember what part of South Vietnam that was?
It was in the southern part.
The far southern area.
Not far southern. It was maybe north of the southern part.
Okay. You landed. The heat probably reminded you of Louisiana.
Oh, yeah, it was. Yeah, it was. Pretty obvious what it was going to be like when you got off the plane. Pretty steamy.
Okay.
And then in Benoit, it was like processing all over again. They would sort out. We were probably there 2 or 3 days. And then they finally decided where you were going to end up.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to end up in the Americhel division, which was north. Pretty far north.
Okay.
While we were waiting, we had a little chance to party a little bit for a couple of days. And you also had a chance to listen to the field radios of people who were out in the field.
Mm-hmm.
And as to what that might be like. And I still remember this, that there was a lot of... leeches. Leeches were a huge problem.
Okay.
And they crawl on you, and they suck the blood out of you, and
mm-hmm.
they're hard to get rid of. And, that's the first, not only did you have to worry about snakes and big spiders, but then these leeches were really a nuisance. And the unit we were going to was, they were loaded with leeches. And so, didn't look forward to that at all.
Yeah.
And,
So how long were you doing that? Just listening in and
just a couple of days at the most, okay. 2-3 days at TAPS.
So how did they once they figured out where you were going and they told you were going to the Americhel division?
Mm-hmm.
How did you get there?
I believe we went in a helicopter. Depending on, I'm pretty sure we took a helicopter up there.
So how many of the guys that you flew in with went to the AmeriCal?
Maybe a half a dozen.
Okay.
And we all went together. And then, again, when you landed there at the AmeriCal division, then they sorted out which unit you were going to go to within the division.
Okay.
So...
were you still with any of the guys that you knew?
At that point, it was like everybody was going in their own direction.
Okay.
So it was like new people all over the place. So, although I am remembering now, the guy who I went to the airport with, we were pretty good friends. And we were joking about, we ran into somebody who was in training with us, who was an obnoxious guy. And he would always brag about this or that, and I'm not going to Vietnam kind of thing. And there he was in Vietnam walking around. So we both had a laugh about that, you know.
not going, huh?
Yeah. Right.
So you flew in a helicopter. Was this your first opportunity to fly in a helicopter?
Yeah.
And you were, again, you were 21, 22?
What did we say? 23, I think. 23.
Okay.
I was there in 68.
Right, so, yeah. Right.
And I was an older, you know, a lot of them were 18, 19.
Right.
Although there were a few of us.
Old guys.
Old-timers, yeah.
So we got in the helicopter. You were taken to your division. How long did the flight take there?
It was probably less than an hour. And again, I'm sure you've seen helicopters where it's open on the sides. And,
right.
You know, makes you a little nervous when you're sitting there. that they take a little turn and you're going to flap out of there.
They have chairs? Are you sitting on the floor of the helicopter?
On the floor.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you had your pack with everything in it?
I'm trying to think. I'm not sure we had our pack yet, because until you got to your final unit, I mean,
okay.
it made no sense to be carrying a bunch of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I did have my personal stuff with
right.
me.
Right. Okay. So you got to the AmeriCal division, and as you were landing, what did you...
Now then you're getting at the smaller, this is where the war is actually happening.
Right.
And again, they had a base camp where, you know, they had clerical people working there and stuff like that. So we were there again another day or two, and before we actually went out into the field where we were going to end up.
Mm-hmm.
And depended on the need, you know. You know, there was losing a lot of people there, so.
So you were basically taking the place of someone who'd been lost.
Yeah, right. So.
So you were out in the field. What was it? Where did they? What were your living situations like? Were you in tents? Were you living in? Was it a building of some sort?
No. They had these so-called base camps, which you would get to rarely, where you slept with a roof over your head in a bunker, and you might even get a warm meal. But the first day out in the field, there was an operation. You know, we got there, and your job was to walk through the jungle and, you know, looking for the enemy, so to speak, or as I've seen referred to many times, to try to draw fire from the enemy so you know where the enemy was, and which is a pretty stupid way to run a war. I mean, it was their home, and here we are making noise, you know, going through the jungle. And so I remember the first operation, we had to walk through the jungle, and it was like mountainous. So it was, you know, you had to go up.
Right.
Go up and down, and... it was really, and again, it was hot. And so I remember that first day, I had whatever I had in my pack was so much, I couldn't take it anymore. After a while, I just, you know, I was breathing so hard, and the squad leader, Terry Hardig, who was in charge of our squad, he took off his very light backpack mm-hmm. and gave it to me and took my heavy one. And, I mean, that was, you know, pretty classy.
Pretty compassionate thing to do.
Yeah, right. So at the end of that day, I ended up throwing out all the junk that I had in my pack, you know, because mm-hmm. it was, you didn't need it. You had to carry it. So so that was a typical day. You know, you would get to where you were going, and you would dig in, you know, dig trenches. To, mm-hmm. And you would have to, during the night, you would have to watch, go on guard duty. And you would have to have it a couple times during the night, and just to watch that nobody penetrates your area.
Mm-hmm.
And and it was kind of an amusing situation. I always liked to get up first or get a head start on the day. So I tried to time it so that I would be the last person watching, you know, it would start getting light. Mm-hmm. And it took me about two or three times to realize that, you know, you would pass the watch off to the next guy. Everybody was moving the time up. And I'd be, here I am, it's supposed to be getting light out and it's still pitch black. So
so it was a literal watch that you passed.
So anyway, it only took me two or three times to realize that I was getting swindled. But again, you know, it was rough. You know, you wouldn't get a good night's sleep, and even when you were allowed to sleep, you were always worried that the guy who's on guard is going to fall asleep or something. And,
right.
Which happened more than once. So again, it was that was our job.
Where were you sleeping? Were you sleeping in tents, in sleeping bags, just on the ground?
On the ground, yeah, right.
Did you have anything to sleep on, or just?
Not really, no.
Just wherever you were, that's where you slept?
Right.
What was your food?
The food was sea rations and,
okay.
In cans, and it was pretty generic.
Like what was
the... Oh, like one of the ones that everybody hated was ham and eggs in a can. And for some reason, I liked that one.
Okay.
So if you were going to trade with somebody, it was easy to get that. Or they had like hot dogs and beans in a can and macaroni.
You heat it up?
Well, yes and no. They gave you... If the supplies were there, you could heat it up, but oftentimes it was not available.
Mm-hmm.
So you just had to eat it as it was. And so the other downside of cans was we would get resupplied maybe every other day or something, and they would give you enough food for until the next time you were going to get supplied. But that meant you had to carry it on your back. And those cans were heavy.
Yeah.
So again, and you just had to deal with it. And so we would do this probably. Oh, you'd be out in the field for 2 to 3 weeks at a shot.
Okay.
You would be living like that, and then every now and then they would take you to a fire base, which was, you know, you could take a shower. I mean, okay. That's the other thing. There was no water to take a shower. You were just filthy and
yeah.
sweaty and filthy. And
and if you went in the river, you might get the leeches.
Yeah, or water moccasins.
Mm-hmm.
And the other issue was you'd have to sometimes walk through rice paddies, and your feet would get wet, and they would never dry out. My feet were not dry the whole time I was there. And my feet still suffer today with mm-hmm. fungus from that. And
did you ever have to deal with the the water moccasins or the leeches or any of that yourself?
No, you know, I was lucky. I was lucky. I don't think I ever saw a water moccasin, although I was chased by a snake one time on land.
Really?
It scared the hell out of me. It was, we were searching a village, and there was a pile of rubbish, and one of the guys had one of the locals start moving stuff around on there, and he started taking off whatever was on the pile, and there was a snake in there. It had to be, oh my God. I don't know how long it was.
Like 6 feet?
Probably 10 feet.
Okay.
I mean, and it just, and snakes are fast.
Right.
And it started crawling, going after people, and I mean, I just...
Whoever ran. Was close.
Right. I mean, I remember running so fast, so far, but snakes are fast. And thank God it got to a tree, and it went up into a tree. So it was never, I never had to confront it. But it, I mean, it's a mental game when you're out there. You have to worry about things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And poisonous spiders and things like that. So
but you managed to avoid all those.
I was lucky in that respect.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
The leeches, I thank God I didn't have to deal with them very much at all.
So you said you'd be out 2 or 3 weeks at a time, come back into a fire base, and it sounds like that was sort of your break.
That was, yeah, if you want to call it that.
Yeah. What did you do to try to decompress a little bit?
Well, you know, you catch up on your writing letters and that kind of thing. And they did have a mess hall where you could get warm food. You could take a shower. I mean, it was, you know, almost human.
A little civilization.
A little civilization, exactly, right. And the safety, a little bit of safety of being on this fire base, which was surrounded by barbed wire and that kind of thing. But it still didn't make you immune from being attacked.
Right. Did you, you wrote to your family, did you have any restrictions on what you could or couldn't tell them?
Not that I know of. I'm not sure if they ever opened your mail I'm going to say no.
Okay.
Because any information that was in there couldn't do anybody any good if they intercepted it.
You got letters from home?
I did, yeah. And, you know, there was always the one of the highlights of, you know, getting letters. So
it didn't matter what they said, just that you got mail.
Oh yeah, yeah. It was always good to, you know, touch base with what was going on back home.
Did you hear any of the news about what was happening back home?
Not really. You know, I remember, I think while I was there, a few people got assassinated and didn't really know much about it.
Mm-hmm.
I think Kennedy, no.
Robert Kennedy.
Robert Kennedy, I think.
And Martin Luther King.
Martin Luther King.
Those were in April of that year, yeah.
Yeah, okay, so I was in the service then.
Mm-hmm.
So that is kind of a cloud in my life, you know, when that stuff happened.
Okay. Did you ever get any, I know you said your family didn't have much, did you ever get any packages from family or friends?
I did, not so much from my mother, but there was one of my wife's cousins, kind of, and he's maybe about your age, younger. And
about 10 years younger than you.
Yeah, yeah, somewhere around there. But they used to send me stuff every now and then. And, you know, that was...
Like what did they send you?
Oh, like sweets. And I remember one time somebody sent me a bottle of booze. One of the things that you would get is, not all the time, but every other day maybe, everybody would get 2 cans of pop or beer. And so I would, or maybe 2 of each, I don't know. But I would always try to trade the pop for the beer. And so I would, you know, have a couple of beers, and And then one time when I got the bottle of booze, I kept my pop. And the squad leader got a little suspicious. And so I forgot how that turned out. But anyway, that kind of stuff.
Did you guys share when someone got something?
Yeah, definitely. And so, you know, a lot of camaraderie as far as that goes.
But these are all new guys to you now as far as nobody you knew from back home.
Exactly right, yep.
But I'm imagining you got pretty close to some of these guys.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Under duress. Under
very stressful conditions, yeah. Yep. And so I might as well throw out a couple of these situations while we're talking about being in the field. But we were on ambush one night, which meant going out at night. And stupidly, you know, being out at night. And it turns out that they had an ambush for us. And so we were kind of all gathered around. And all of a sudden, a rocket came into the middle of us. And two of my best friends got killed immediately. And at that point, we were starting to lose guys pretty quick. And so, you know, that stuff like that, it's a war, you know, stuff like that happens. And then another situation was, I think a couple of days after that, we had, our group was, I mean, a squad is supposed to have 10 guys, and I think we were down to 4. And two of them, that was their very first day in the field.
Mm-hmm.
So even at that, we had to go on a little patrol. I think we combined with the other squad. And my squad leader, even at that, you still had to do KP.
Mm-hmm.
And he asked me if I would do KP because he knows, he and I got along pretty well, and people squawk and moan when they get an assignment like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I pointed out to him that in this situation, there was another guy who only had like a month left in the field. And I said, you know what, you may want to ask him for if he wants to do KP, because it would be safer.
You wouldn't have to go in the field.
Right. And it turns out that's the day I got shot. So, you know, and I feel I would do the same thing again today. I mean, if somebody's got that short of time,
why risk it?
Why risk it, right? And
So tell me what happened when you got shot. Well, what was going on?
Well, it was fairly quiet. We were walking around, and I still remember seeing a statue of Buddha, and there was a sniper there, and he just started shooting, and I got shot in the leg, and
this was during the day?
During the day, yeah.
Okay.
And so, you know, start calling for the medic. And, of course, the medic doesn't want to come right away because this guy still could be out there.
Right.
And if he identifies the medic, that's like worth double points, you know, if you can get the medic.
Right, because then he can't save anybody.
Right, yeah, exactly. And so it took a while, but he finally got to me, and they put some kind of plastic thing over my whole leg because they had no idea what damage was on my leg.
Was it like in your calf or
it
your?
It was in my calf, yeah.
Okay.
And in retrospect, I was very lucky. It didn't hit any main arteries,
mm-hmm,
or the bone, and so I was very lucky as far as that goes.
Did it lodge or did it go through?
It went through.
And, okay.
So anyway, they put this like plastic thing on my whole leg and inflated it with air so that I couldn't mobilize it.
Mm-hmm.
And then so I got helicoptered out to the nearest hospital.
And so this was in, this was still in 68, was it 69?
It was in 69.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you were like 26?
Well, it was in February, end of February.
Okay.
So I probably still wasn't my birthday yet. So
okay.
I was probably still the same age.
Okay.
And so from there, I was, I was in hospitals in Vietnam, and then they flew me to Japan in a hospital, and then finally to the States. So I was in the hospital. They sent me home after that wound.
So you'd been in Vietnam for a year?
About 5 months.
Five months.
I got there, October, okay. November, December, January, February.
Okay.
5, maybe 6 months, including hospital time.
Okay. Was it common to send men home if they'd gotten shot?
Well, it depends on how serious it was. Mine was serious enough.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because it tore muscle?
Yeah. I mean, I got 50-some stitches.
So okay.
It was pretty significant.
Right.
And something else I was going to say.
So when you got shot, you called the medic. That's how they know that something was wrong.
Right.
And the medic was with your squad, or there were several squads?
No, just one squad. It was
just one.
Very small group. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So he was there, and
you said he put a plastic thing on that they inflated.
Mm-hmm.
Was it just inflated by mouth?
Yeah.
And it was over your whole leg, so it put pressure on the wound, and it also kept your leg from
immobile. I think it was more to stabilize my leg, because they didn't know if there was a broken bone or anything.
Uh-huh.
So, and I know when I was in the hospital in Vietnam, the sergeant, the administrative sergeant, came to visit me with somebody else, And I was just laying there, and it's a good thing he did, because I was sweating like a pig.
Mm-hmm.
And I had an infection.
Yeah.
If he didn't show up that day, I mean, I don't know how I'm supposed to feel, you know.
Right.
I figured it's all part of the process.
Mm-hmm.
But he called attention to the doctor, and I can't remember what they did. They probably gave me morphine or something.
Some sort of antibiotic, probably.
Yeah, could be. But So then I got.
The hospital they took you to the first time in Vietnam was a field hospital.
Yeah.
Was it an actual building, or was it just they had tents, or?
No, it was an actual building.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they do any surgery, or they just clean it, or you don't remember?
I don't know what they did, to be honest with you.
Okay. And then from there, they sent you to Japan?
Japan for a while, yeah.
Okay.
And then I went to, I ended up at Chanute Air Force Base in near Champaign, Illinois.
Yeah.
And I was there for quite a while. And in fact, from there, they gave me a medical leave for
mm-hmm.
30 days. So I was able to come home and... But I was actually hospitalized for probably 7 or 8 months before they sent me back to duty. I finally ended up at Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri.
And then, okay.
And then they put me into finance.
Okay.
So, and that's where I spent the rest of my military days.
Okay.
And I was able to... they had a deal where they would let you out early if you were going to go back to school, and as it turns out, I applied for graduate school, and the semester started perfectly, so I was able to get out a couple of months early.
Okay.
So that was kind of sweet.
So did the Army pay for your graduate school?
Well, the GI Bill.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had a GI Bill, which
okay.
I took advantage of.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you got your master's degree then?
Yeah. Actually, I got two of them.
Okay. Finance and what?
One was in management systems, and the other one was in accounting.
Okay. So you went to Vietnam in 68, you came home in 69?
70. So by the time I got out.
By the time you got, okay.
Yeah.
You came back to the States in 69, but by the time you got out of the Army, it was 70.
70, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And you were discharged at Fort Leonard Wood?
Yeah.
Okay. And so you served, was it 2 years?
Oh, yeah. So a couple of months short of 2 years, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when you got home after you were shot, your parents were notified, your family was notified.
Yes.
You heard from them?
Yeah, well, somewhere along the line, I was able to make a phone call from Vietnam and talk to my mother. And kind of reassured her that, you know, I was okay.
Uh-huh.
And at the time I was planning on getting married the following June after I got out of the service.
Okay.
So, you know, I was only able to get one phone call, and I figured I'd call my mother because I was sure she was home,
mm-hmm.
not knowing whether my future wife would be.
Mm-hmm.
So that turned out okay.
So your family was probably really reassured to know you were okay.
Yeah, well, again, getting back to my father,
uh-huh.
who is an odd person. I mean, here I am away fighting a war. I walked in the door, and he was sitting reading the newspaper. When I walked in the door, he didn't even look up. I mean, that was so hurtful.
Yeah. Your mom wasn't like that.
Oh, no.
She probably ran. She probably ran to hold you.
Yeah. So anyway, I was back home and started life as a civilian.
Okay. You said you had a fiance.
Yes.
And so she was somebody you knew from school or from around the neighborhood?
Yeah, we met when we were in high school.
Okay.
And, you know, I think we got engaged before I went over to Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, we got married in June of the year after I got home.
Okay.
And we're still married today.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
So you went to school on the GI Bill. You got your two masters.
Yes.
You went back to People's Gas.
I did.
So it sounds like their investment in you had been a very good one. Very advantageous for them. When you did get back home and back, you were discharged. What was the first thing you did?
Probably went out for a pizza somewhere. I'm trying to remember. I think I went. I went and hooked up with some of my friends from the gas company and some of the neighbors, and you know,
mm-hmm.
just catching up on stuff. But I don't remember doing anything special of any kind.
Mm-hmm.
Especially since we were getting married, you know, there was a lot to do related to that.
Right.
Of course, nothing of which my opinion mattered.
So. Yeah. Just the fact that you were getting married was enough.
Yeah, right.
So you got married, you settled down, you had your job. Did you keep in touch with anyone who was still in Vietnam?
Not really. Well, there was there were a couple of people. One of the guys that was still alive and left, I used to write letters to him, and I wrote a letter to him. We used to write, and then I got it back and to say he was dead. But other than that, ironically, I played softball, and I played softball my whole life, and I was on a 50 and over team. In fact, I ran the team.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the guys who I recruited to play on my team. I don't even know how I got to know him. It turns out he was in the exact same unit as me in Vietnam.
Oh, really?
I mean, the same company, the same squad, everything. And he was there earlier.
Okay.
And he had left by the time I got there. But, I mean, what are the odds of that?
Yeah.
And it just blows me away. And so his situation was he trained as a group of guys and shipped over to Vietnam as a group.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, he had a group of people that were, they trained together, they went together, they served together in Vietnam. So he had a big group of people that he knew.
Mm-hmm.
And as opposed to me going over there by myself.
You know? Right.
But as it turns out, that the same unit has reunions. And so I went to one a few years ago and to see if anybody that I served with would show up at the reunion. And that wasn't the case. There was one guy who we kind of overlapped a little bit. But so I did that. I don't know if I did it once or twice, but it was not the same. I mean, that bunch kind of all knew each other. They trained together, and so there was not much in. I mean, there was a lot in common, but not really.
Right.
Because we didn't do anything together. So
right.
I did that, and then I stopped going to that.
Do you belong to any veterans organizations?
I do. I belong to the Disabled American Veterans, American Legion. In fact, I'm a lifetime member of the DAV. And then this AmeriCal division has a group that I also belong to. I'm a lifetime member of that also. It's a pretty good organization. They have a newsletter that they print a thing three times a year or so with information about, you know, people sometimes write in there and ask if anybody served with this person, you know, contact me just to know what it was like before they died. And ironically, that just triggered in my mind. One of those issues had one of those two people, my good friends who got killed, it was one of their relatives who wanted to know.
Okay.
And so I contacted him, and, you know, that was pretty powerful just to have that conversation. So I still remember I was reading that in bed and seeing that name there. I mean, my heart started pounding so fast that this even was happening. But it's kind of good to keep in touch with, you know, they have people write stories in there about their time in Vietnam and stuff like that. And so just to keep tabs.
Many Vietnam vets have had nightmares and problems like that. Does the keeping in touch with these people help with the any memories that you have from there?
You know, I guess I feel lucky that I don't feel as scarred as I could have been.
Mm.
Now, if I would have been in Vietnam a whole year, I think my life would be totally different.
Okay.
Even though I got wounded, my brain was still okay when I left, but if I would have been there the whole year, I'm not so sure that would have been the case.
Okay. So the memento you have from the war is your wound, your leg.
Yeah.
That's something that continues to bother you.
It doesn't bother me on a day-to-day basis for the most part. But you know, the scar is still there, so that's a memory.
Right. So when you look back on the experiences that you had in the military, how did your service affect your life, first of all?
Well, I'd say it it makes me anti-war. I get so offended with us being in the Middle East, these young kids fighting wars against people who are having a civil war. It really bothers me.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing I should say, I guess, is on Veterans Day every year, one of the local high schools, Riverside Brookfield,
mm-hmm.
they have a special event on Veterans Day where they gather the whole school in the gym, and they have a real class. They have give us breakfast and, you know, have, you know, a couple of speeches and stuff. And then after that is over, then each person goes to a class and talks to the kids. And so I've done that for last year. I went to my grandkids' school, but I've gone every year
mm-hmm.
Since then. It's a really good experience. And when I talk to those kids, I tell them my position on war.
Mm-hmm.
It sucks. We shouldn't be doing this stuff. And so I feel in my little way, I'm kind of, you know, and I'm sure there's, in fact, I know there's some of these people who go there. They're all, you know, flag this and flag that, and, you know, defend your country, and totally the opposite of me.
Mm.
But so that's, I feel like I'm helping in that way.
Maybe encouraging a different approach in the future.
Yeah.
Right. When you returned, I don't know what sort of reception you got. It was a difficult time for our country.
It was, yeah.
Mm-hmm. When you look back on what you went through, you said you looked at war differently now. What about what everything else you see happening in the world? Do you see history repeating itself, or do you think we're just doing taking steps in the wrong direction, the right direction?
Have we learned from Vietnam? No. We went to Iraq, and now we're continuing. You know, some of these people want to go to Syria and all these other countries. It's ridiculous. It's totally ridiculous. Yeah, it's shameful that our politicians don't get it. Yeah.
Well, it may be a case of those who were there don't want to go back.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Those who have been in war.
Yeah, if these politicians had any relative that were there,
mm-hmm.
I think they might have a different take on it.
Right.
But unreal.
Okay. Is there anything we haven't talked about that you'd like to bring up before we conclude here?
Trying to think. I think we pretty much covered most of the experience. Although, you know, when I walk out of here, I'm going to think, what's that one thing I...
Okay, well, if you... have nothing more, then we will. Then I would like to thank you for sharing your story with us,
okay.
Sharing your background, and we are going off record.
Okay.